The goal is to get information, to get data, to get email. What they want exactly and what they do with it, you know, we don't know. We can only speculate.
Chinese cyber theft continues. It's Friday, November 26th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're online. You can find us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, China pledges calmer seas. Aussie rhyming slang. New Asian pet food. Legal marijuana. Japanese space tourists. It's all on today's VOA Asia. A trend in major U.S. cyber hacks has emerged. They seem to happen during holidays in the United States. One of the theories for their timing is that some Americans may let their guard down while trying to enjoy a day off. The U.S. Thanksgiving holiday is not only a time for gathering with family and enjoying a big feast, it's also when home computers and phones are being used to snap up deals ahead of the Christmas gift-giving season. So the holiday, like others, presents a prime opportunity for thieves to hack and steal private data and perhaps real assets in the process. China was behind one of the biggest hacks of all time, quietly stealing email and data from organizations, according to the United States and other nations' governments. Experts say China-orchestrated attacks on strategic targets have increased in recent years. Michelle Quinn logs into the details.
On a January evening, the cybersecurity firm Veloxity, which is always looking for anything unusual on the networks of its clients, including governments, the defense industry, and financial firms, detected an anomaly.
We were looking at what was large byte transfer, basically large amounts of data leaving one of our customers' networks. Hair in our arms raising a little bit, we're kind of alarms going off at this point.
That discovery turned out to be a stealth operation to exploit an unknown vulnerability in Microsoft Exchange, an email server used by businesses, governments, and other organizations that have large numbers of users. The hackers were stealing emails. The administration of U.S. President Joe Biden and its allies said the initial breach was the result of a Chinese state-sponsored hack. China has denied any connection to the Microsoft hack. An article in its state-run newspaper, Global Times, blamed the U.S. for cyber attacks against China. For Stephen Adair of Veloxity, some early clues in the Microsoft Exchange hack pointed to China, such as the language in some of the code, where the data was going, and the kinds of targets.
So, kind of like a pure cyber espionage play to where the goal is to get information, to get data, to get email. What they want exactly and what they do with it, we don't know. We can only speculate. But highly targeted operation, really under the radar.
While Russia-based hackers have been responsible for some of the biggest cyber attacks in the U.S., cybersecurity firms say that over the past 2 years, Beijing has directed more cyber operations, targeting countries in Asia as well as nations worldwide, to gather social, economic, and political intelligence. In their recent virtual meeting, Biden and Chinese President Xi Jinping discuss how to reduce cyber conflicts between the two countries.
I think what you're seeing now is this realization that actually the Chinese espionage efforts never disappeared and in fact became significantly more technologically sophisticated.
In the Microsoft Exchange hack, word of the weakness got out before the company created a patch. Hacking groups from around the world were able to exploit this virtual backdoor and indiscriminately attack targets.
We got organizations from all around the world, ranging from, big defense contractors and government agencies down to like small mom and pop like shops, like funeral homes, school districts. I put that up there as one of the worst or best, however you want to describe it, of hacks probably of all time.
President Biden recently signed a bipartisan infrastructure bill into law that includes nearly $2 billion for cybersecurity. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
You'll find more on this and all the stories you hear on VOA Asia by following us on Twitter, also on Facebook, and you can visit us at our website, voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. China says it will shun hegemony in the disputed Asian Sea. Australia moves to list the base and Hezbollah as terrorist organizations. In Myanmar, reporting becomes more difficult month by month. An envoy says U.S. is concerned about worsening humanitarian crisis in Afghanistan. Will Modi's backtracking on farm laws appease Indian farmers? You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and of course the voanews.com website. We continue with VOA Asia. Southeast Asian claimants to the strategic South China Sea and experts following the region say Beijing's pledge this week to avoid dominance comes too late after years of Chinese expansion. President Xi Jinping made the pledge Monday at a virtual summit marking the 30th anniversary of ASEAN-China dialogue. He told leaders of the 10-member Association of Southeast Asian Nations that Beijing would avoid bullying smaller countries over their competing claims to the 3.5 million square kilometer sea. The Chinese government has conducted landfilling of tiny islets in the sea, in some cases for military use, alarming the other countries. The Chinese Navy, Coast Guard, as well as its fishing fleets often antagonize other claimants, including Brunei, Malaysia, the Philippines, and Vietnam, all militarily weaker than China. The disputed maritime tracts are prized for fisheries and subterranean fossil fuel reserves. Jay Bolton Bacall, International Maritime Affairs Professor at the University of the Philippines in Quezon City, says Xi's comments have been met with skepticism among ASEAN member states because Southeast Asian leaders have heard similar language before.
The rest of the region, of course, won't take it at face value. It's the actions of China that raise these concerns, even though China has been giving that kind of assurance even before.
China has no intention to quit its positions in the sea, says Alexander Vuving, professor at the Asia-Pacific Center for Security Studies in Hawaii.
The meeting between Biden and Xi, people in Southeast Asia would see some sort of enhanced relationship between the two big powers. And then previously there was the AUKUS announcement also in the neighborhood of Southeast Asia. So time and again, the Chinese felt that they need to reassure their Southeast Asian neighbors a little bit.
Vietnam has sparred with China over disputed islands since the 1970s, leading to deadly clashes in 1974 and 1988. Malaysia and the Philippines have spoken out over the past year, and earlier this month, Chinese Coast Guard vessels blocked Philippine resupply boats and fired water cannons. Gregory Poling is director of the Asia Maritime Transparency Initiative under the Washington, D.C.-based Center for Strategic and International Studies.
The problem is that message becomes more laughable to a lot of its neighbors with every passing year. You look at South China Sea, Taiwan Strait, the border with India. It's getting hard even for the members of ASEAN who aren't directly involved in the disputes to still believe this Chinese line.
Regional experts like Eduardo Arral, associate professor at the National University of Singapore's Public Policy School, say that having Xi Jinping take the unusual step of personally addressing the fraught issue of hegemony on the South China Sea before ASEAN member states was the logical thing to do for a burgeoning global power.
When you're a small country and you border with a big country, you get nervous when that big country grows very big. So I guess for the last 30 years, this has been the utmost question on the minds of leaders of ASEAN. So when they have this opportunity to meet with President Xi Jinping, they probably expect him to make those assurances.
China has the world's third strongest armed forces after the United States and Russia. While China is expected to spread its sphere of influence throughout the region without risking trade through any blockage of sea lanes, Arral says Beijing might also try to displace the influence of Washington, which maintains a regular naval presence and sells arms in the region. ASEAN members without South China Sea claims are Cambodia, Laos, Myanmar, Singapore, and Thailand. We thank Ralph Jennings for contributing this story. Happening now in Asia, the Solomon Islands imposed a 36-hour lockdown in its capital after protesters calling for the prime minister to resign looted stores and set fire to buildings, including in the Pacific nation's parliament. Australia is deploying more than 100 police and military personnel to help restore order. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We've made it to Friday. We're glad you're with us on VOA Asia. Linguists are to focus on rhyming slang in new research for the Australian National Dictionary. They want to add it to an existing and impressive lexicon of Aussie slang. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Barry Crocker is an Australian singer and actor. In the world of rhyming slang, his name is synonymous with having a bad time. Every year, the Australian National Dictionary Centre looks for new contributions for the Australian National Dictionary. This year's focus is on rhyming slang for future editions of the dictionary and its database. Mark Gwynn, an editor at the centre, talked about rhyming slang with VOA.
I've got plenty of favourites. I've always loved Noah, Noah's Ark, Shark. That's a good example of an Australian one, and if someone mentioned Noah, you'd be worried. But some of my favourites are Barry Crocker, Shocker.
Gwynn believes that this type of slang probably emerged in East London in the middle of the 1800s. It found its way from Britain to colonial Australia very soon afterward, where it's developed a distinctive style of its own, although it does have its critics.
People have made the comment that it is a very masculine thing. People have also made the comment that it's a very Anglo-Celtic thing. So we'd be interested to know if other communities and other ethnic groups in Australia have picked it up. This is the kind of information we're interested in. But like I said, I think its heyday has gone. There are various other forms of slang these days.
Poetic colloquialisms in Australia are refusing to go away quietly, though. Gwynn says that even the pandemic has yielded more rhyming slang.
We've had My Sharona for Corona, for the coronavirus, from that 1970s song. And I know we've also heard, and I think our friends in the UK also share, Miley Cyrus for Virus. So clearly rhyming is still an aspect of slang that's going on here and elsewhere.
Australians might not be familiar with less familiar slang terms such as Merv Hughes, shoes, or a Dad and Dave, shave, but many might know about doing the Harold Holt. It means to bolt or to leave without explanation. It refers to a former Australian Prime Minister, Harold Holt, who disappeared while swimming at a beach in the state of Victoria in 1967. Researchers hope that public submissions will help them identify the extent to which rhyming slang is still used in Australia and add new terms to its database. Any new additions could be included in the Australian National Dictionary to build on the publication's collection of Australian words and their origins. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. Indian journalists are denouncing the arrest of two colleagues who were charged with spreading communal disharmony after they attempted to cover violent attacks on Muslims by Hindu activists earlier this month. Many journalists say India's ruling party is trying to silence the media. You'll find this and all the big stories on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. There's much more ahead on VOA Asia. Right now, a new twist for pet food and easing coronavirus restrictions in Singapore are the topics on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Chris Cascao.
Licking its lips imperiously, a ginger cat mops up every last morsel of food from its curly whiskers, clearly undaunted by its supper's rather unusual base ingredient, silkworm pupae. The 15 feline residents of the Mao Tai Tai Cat Cafe in Taiwan are among volunteer taste testers sampling a new cat food developed by silkworm experts. As well as making use of what was previously just a byproduct of silk production, the scientists say the food eliminates harmful intestinal bacteria with the added bonus of reducing the odor of the cat's own byproducts. Rosa Su, manager of the cafe.
After eating this food, they have more energy and less smelly feces, which is more than I expect. Very good.
The pupae are already rich in protein, fat, and minerals, but the Maioli team has already developed a technique to boost their content of immune proteins that kill harmful bacteria inside the host. The pet food market in Taiwan presents a lucrative opportunity. Animal ownership is on the rise, and the economy around it is valued at more than $1 billion. A can of the silkworm cat food sells for $2.43, a little more than average canned wet food. Eva Liu, CEO of the company that started mass production of the new food a month ago, says the response has been overwhelming. She says, "I feel pet owners nowadays are more focused on ingredients." Bangladeshi migrant worker MD Sharif Uddin used to spend his days off with friends outside his cramped Singapore dormitory, but coronavirus curbs have for 18 months left him stuck inside during his spare time. More than 300,000 migrant workers, many of them from South Asia, live in dorms in the prosperous city-state, where they are typically packed into shared rooms and sleep on bunk beds. The vast complexes were hit by COVID-19 and locked down at the start of the pandemic, while restrictions were introduced across the whole country for a period to prevent a broader outbreak. Curbs have been eased for most in Singapore, where despite currently facing a renewed virus wave, vaccinated people can go out shopping and to restaurants, and borders are gradually reopening. But it is a different story for the low-paid migrants, who remain subject to far more onerous restrictions that mostly allow them to travel only between their work and accommodation. MD Sharif Uddin.
I want to request the authorities to see ourselves through their humanitarian eyes and allow us, within the context of law, to let us go out like any normal human beings.
The government pledged to take steps such as building new dormitories with more modern facilities and more space for residents. But the continued restrictions faced by the workers, who typically earn from 500 Singapore dollars to 1,000 Singapore dollars, that's 370 to 740 US dollars a month, in one of the world's most expensive cities, highlight how little has changed in reality, critics say. For Business Scene, I'm Chris Cascajo.
Making headlines in Asia, a top official in Taliban-led Afghanistan has assured female players they can continue playing cricket. The assurance comes as the South Asian nation risks international isolation following the Taliban's return to power, raising fears the Islamist group would not allow women to play the sport. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, New York State legalized recreational marijuana use this year, and the move came just in time to host the annual Cannabis World Congress and Business Exposition. Evgeny Maslov has the story. It's narrated by Anna Rice.
New York State legalized recreational marijuana use just this year. The industry is expected to grow dramatically, bringing in profits and jobs. Here at the Cannabis World Congress and Business Exposition, more than 200 companies are on hand looking to cash in. But it's not just the money that state officials, like New York Lieutenant Governor Brian Benjamin, are interested in.
We're estimating somewhere $400+ million of revenue once we get the industry up and running. To me, that's a decent number. I mean, I'm more concerned about all the other numbers, right? The people who are no longer being incarcerated for marijuana. There's an economic benefit to that. All of the sort of jobs that created because of the industry.
All kinds of products are on display here. Marijuana production and processing products, and those linked to packaging. But visitors will not find marijuana itself in the halls of the Javits Center. It is found only in specialized stores. Most products contain a marijuana extract called cannabidiol, or CBD. CBD is touted as having all kinds of positive impacts, including relieving anxiety and insomnia. A lot of these claims are unproven, but people who use CBD are sold on its positive effects.
Well, I started this in 2018 for my pup, bad anxiety. CBD helps with anxiety, depression, arthritis, even helps treat MS, and can even help fight cancer and bring down tumors.
We focus not only the home grow, but the commercial scale as well. This style of fixture here is particularly for the commercial scale. You know, you may have rooms that companies build out that'll have 500 of these in a single room.
We're basically farmers at heart. We have 10 years of experience in organic vegetable production, wine grape production, and cannabis. And we breed cannabis for agricultural purposes.
According to Vox Pops and surveys, every year more and more Americans support legalizing recreational marijuana. According to Pew Research Center, only about 8% of Americans today say marijuana should not be legal for use by adults.
Well, I think it's years and years, decades of programming the society that drugs are bad, pot is the gateway drug, marijuana is no good. It's certainly not, you know, anyone who learns about it and gets educated, that's certainly not the case.
The expo organizers say their goal is not only education, but also promotion of the marijuana industry on the East Coast, showing the many economic benefits it will have. For Evgeny Maslov in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
The U.S. space agency NASA is testing an asteroid assaulting system to protect planet Earth. Plus, Japanese tourists are readying for the trip of a lifetime, and we have a look at the historic sky-darkening lunar eclipse. VOA's Arash Arabisadi brings us news from space.
This week from Vandenberg Air Force Base in California, NASA launched a spacecraft on a mission straight out of a Hollywood movie. The Double Asteroid Redirection Test, or DART for short, began a 10-month mission to crash itself into an asteroid named Dimorphos.
What does it actually take to deflect an asteroid? Well, you need a propulsion system. You've got to get really up close to it. And you need a fantastic guidance and navigation system.
Airbus's Matthew Studdard explaining that even flying at around 24,000 kilometers per hour, DART's mission isn't to destroy the asteroid on impact, but rather just to give it enough of a nudge to reroute it away from Earth. DART will fly nearly 11 million kilometers for the test as part of a relatively low-cost $330 million project. NASA plans for impact in September of next year. No worries either way, as Dimorphos poses no real threat to Earth. In other news, from the Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan, two future space tourists and their cosmonaut flight mate prepared for their upcoming trip to the International Space Station. Japanese entrepreneur Yusaka Maezawa and his assistant Yozo Hirano checked their spacesuits and inspected the Soyuz 20 spaceship that will take them to the ISS. Russian state news says this will be the first time in 12 years that space tourists will fly aboard a Soyuz. Maezawa says he was nearly brought to tears by the impressive operation, and the crew is set to launch on the 8th of December. This all comes just a week after Russia fired a missile at one of its own satellites, creating thousands of pieces of space junk that the United States and NATO called reckless, as the debris potentially endangers the space projects of all countries. Meanwhile, Starlink, the global broadband service subsidiary of SpaceX, apologized to customers who complained about a slower-than-expected rollout. Starlink promised customers who paid $100 deposits that they'd have a beta version of the service by mid to late 2021, but the company said in an email that silicon chip shortages would push back delivery until next year. Business Insider reports the company has more than 1,600 satellites in orbit. Astronomers complain those satellites block views of anything beyond them in space. Finally, the longest partial lunar eclipse in centuries happened this week, as previously reported in this segment. Seen here, the lunar eclipse, also called a blood moon, lasted 3 hours, 28 minutes, and 23 seconds. The Earth's shadow covered 98% of the moon, and NASA says it was the longest such event since February of 1440. Arash Arabisadi, VOA News.
That's our program for today and for the week. Continue with us online. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We thank you for joining us, and we thank our team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Keith Lane, Chris Cascao, and Jessica Stone. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.